The Impeachment Witch Hunt with Greg Jarrett.
There was never any doubt that Democrats would impeach President Donald Trump. It was preconceived the very moment he was sworn into office. And the purely partisan vote itself, well, that was preordained. Not a single Republican voted to impeach. It was all Democrats. This is precisely what the framers of the Constitution feared when they debated and devised the impeachment clause, finally arriving at the standard of treason, bribery, high crimes, and misdemeanors. Yet no such crimes are alleged in the recent articles of impeachment approved by Democrats. During House hearings, they did focus on bribery, extortion, even campaign finance violations. Yet when it came time to drafting the articles themselves, they conspicuously omitted them, realizing perhaps there's no evidence to support the very wrongful conduct the framers envisioned and spelled out. Their evidence was actually no evidence at all. It was bereft of proof. Nearly all of the House witnesses called by Democrats offered speculation and hearsay and opinion that they assumed there must have been some quid pro quo demanded by President Trump of Ukrainian President Zelensky in a July 25th telephone call, and they presumed the non-existent demand was for personal and political gain. All of this, of course, was belied by a transcript of the phone conversation itself. Nowhere in the transcript is there a demand, a threat, a condition, or pressure for a quid pro quo to investigate former Vice President Joe Biden for potential corruption. The only fact witness who testified before the House said President Trump told him, "I want nothing. I want no quid pro quo." That didn't matter to Democrats, who claimed to have intuited Donald Trump's intent and motivation. On that basis alone, they chose to impeach. This is precisely what the framers had feared, that an opposing party would seek to remove a president for purely partisan political reasons. In fact, if you read Federalist 65, Alexander Hamilton explained this very fear when he warned as follows, quote, "There will always be the greatest danger that the decision will be regulated more by the comparative strength of parties than by the real demonstrations of innocence or guilt." House Speaker Nancy Pelosi knows this all too well. Months ago, she vowed that the House would never impeach Trump unless there was bipartisan support. Suddenly, she is stricken with an incurable case of amnesia or hypocrisy, and so has House Judiciary Chairman Jerry Nadler, who engineered the articles of impeachment. 2 decades ago, during the Clinton impeachment, he called any partisan impeachment vote illegitimate. He correctly described then what he is doing now, along with his fellow Democrats. Fortunately, the framers were prescient. They knew that someday, perhaps centuries ahead, strident partisans like Pelosi and Nadler would arise to undermine democracy and the vote of the people. This is why, in their immense wisdom, they created a procedural protection, a safeguard, attached to impeachment. No president could be removed upon impeachment except by a supermajority 2/3 in the U.S. Senate. Joining us now is Professor Alan Dershowitz. He has spent much of his distinguished career at Harvard Law School. He's one of the nation's best-known scholars of constitutional law. He's a lifelong Democrat and civil libertarian, and he authored a recent book on impeachment entitled The Case Against Impeaching Trump. His more recent book is Guilt by Accusation. I've read both books. They are terrific. And Professor, thank you for being here.
For your kind words about my book. I appreciate it.
What is your overall reaction to the impeachment of President Trump?
This is a terrible, terrible day for the Constitution, a terrible day for the United States. It's the first time in history that Hamilton's dire fear came true, an impeachment based completely on party line voting, totally partisan, with just two and a half Democrats voting against and one Democrat voting present, but the rest was all along party lines. And the articles of impeachment just don't satisfy the constitutional standards. And now we're seeing something even more dangerous. We're hearing rumors or suggestions from the speaker that maybe she won't even send the articles of impeachment to the Senate, where the president could have a trial and be acquitted, that they would just have the impeachment by the House stand alone. That came from a suggestion made by my friend and colleague Larry Tribe at Harvard Law School, but it would be so blatantly unconstitutional. The process is a two-part process, impeachment by the House and trial by the Senate. You can't have just part of that process go forward.
Does that suggest to you that the real reason the Democrats decided to impeach Donald Trump, knowing full well the Senate would acquit, is that they wanted to do damage to him politically in his reelection bid? And if that's so, I mean, isn't that a dangerous new standard to weaponize impeachment for electoral reasons?
Yeah, I mean, it really is exactly what the Democrats have accused the president of doing when they accuse him of, on the phone call, trying to use a national security issue for his own partisan benefit. And then they turn around and they use impeachment, a very important constitutional process, for their own partisan benefit. I think the difference is that this will backfire on the Democrats. I think, you know, as a liberal Democrat who did not vote for President Trump, I think this is going to help him get reelected. I think a lot of Americans are upset about the misuse of the impeachment process. Even people who think the president did wrong, even people who think he committed political sins with his phone call, I think many Americans don't believe that this reached the level of an impeachable offense and do believe that the Democrats have weaponized impeachment and created a very dangerous precedent, because next time there's a divided government and there's a Democratic president and a Republican House, there'll be many in the Republican Party who'll say, look, they did it to us, we have to do it to them. And that wouldn't be good for either party. It wouldn't be good for the country.
You talked about the constitutional standards for impeachment. And obviously in the impeachment clause, it reads treason, bribery, high crimes, and misdemeanors. But nowhere is that stated in either of the two articles of impeachment. To what extent does that diminish the legitimacy of this impeachment?
I think more than diminish it, it makes it disappear. There is no legitimacy to articles of impeachment that do not allege either treason, bribery, or high crimes and misdemeanors. You must allege one of those constitutional criteria to have a legitimate impeachment. And Hamilton in Federalist 78 made it clear that any act of Congress, whether it be a legislative act or an act of impeachment, that violates the Constitution is void and not valid. And he also said it was the role of the courts to be an umpire between the branches of government, which, of course, completely eliminates the second article, namely the article that the president obstructed Congress by demanding that the Congress go to the courts before enforcing any kind of a subpoena. The Supreme Court granted review in three cases just recently, which give the lie to the Democratic claim of obstruction of justice. The president did what he was supposed to do, and that is challenge subpoenas and require the legislative branch to go to the judicial branch to enforce them.
You know, there is no, as we were talking about, a treason, bribery, high crimes, and misdemeanors stated in either of the two articles of impeachment. Instead, Democrats have embraced abuse of power, which was used in two previous presidential impeachments. What about this abuse of power, a wonderfully amorphous term found nowhere in the Constitution?
Well, not only not found in the Constitution, but rejected by the framers. They easily could have put that in as a ground. They talked about abuse of power. Where I think the confusion lies is between the reasons for having an impeachment provision in the Constitution, and the reasons include you don't want a president who abuses his power, violates his oath of office. But then when it came down to putting in the criteria, Madison was firm in opposing open-ended criteria that could be weaponized by either political party against the other. And so although abuse of power and other kinds of things are the reasons we have impeachment, before you can impeach a sitting president, you have to have clear evidence that he committed treason, bribery, other high crimes and misdemeanors. Those are the prerequisites. Once those prerequisites are met, then you can debate whether it was an abuse of power. For example, President Clinton probably did commit one of those four crimes. Namely, he probably did commit perjury, but he didn't abuse his office in doing so. Or Alexander Hamilton is a better example. He was the Secretary of the Treasury, and he committed adultery, which was a serious felony at the time. He also paid hush money. And then when he was accused of using government funds to pay the hush money, he wrote a pamphlet denying it and disproving it because he knew that would be a high crime. That would be an abuse of office. But simply committing adultery, though it was a serious felony, was a low crime. I think the same thing was true with Clinton. And with Andrew Johnson, there was just no impeachable offense at all. Yes, he violated a congressional statute, but he did it because he believed it was unconstitutional. And he was 100% right. The Supreme Court subsequently ruled that the Tenure of Office Act that said that you couldn't fire a presidential appointee if he had been confirmed by the Senate denied the president his authority to hire and fire as he chooses.
You know, another difference between the past presidential impeachments, the last two, and this one is in the previous cases, there were independent counsels who spent months, if not years, developing evidence of crimes. Ken Starr in the Clinton case identified 11 different felony offenses. Mm-hmm. But none of that has happened here in the course of 7 to 8 weeks. Adam Schiff, in part through secret hearings, heard from witnesses who were offering speculation and hearsay and their opinions. That's not fact evidence, is it?
No, and much of it was really about policy differences and how you deal with Ukraine, whether it is corrupt, whether it isn't corrupt, whether Biden, whether... You know, all of those are matters of degree, and those are good reasons for deciding who to vote for in an election. They are not good reasons for deciding whether to impeach a sitting president and undo an election. This is only, you know, the third time in our history we've impeached, and it's the first time we've done it strictly along party lines. And that's exactly what Hamilton said was the greatest danger we face, that impeachment would be based on the number of votes each party could get rather than on the guilt or innocence of the person being impeached. And that's the danger that we have fallen into. And it's a danger not only today, but for the future. I think we have hurt the constitutional protection of impeachment by watering it down and weaponizing it for partisan political purposes.
And by failing to state crimes, is that now the new standard, a dangerous one? Any perceived misconduct, however minor, even frivolous, is now an impeachable offense, meaning there will be routine impeachments in perpetuity?
Well, I worry very much about that. Virtually every controversial president, from Adams to Jefferson to Jackson to Lincoln, on and on and on, have been accused of abuse of power, and always with some plausible basis. Adams enacted the Alien and Sedition Acts. Jefferson took over the Louisiana Purchase without authority by Congress. Lincoln suspended the writ of habeas corpus. Wilson did terrible things racially. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt detained 110,000 American citizens in concentration detention centers. President Kennedy authorized the wiretapping of Martin Luther King. President Johnson engaged in warlike activities without authorization from Congress. The same thing was true with Nixon. The same thing was true with Bush the Second. President Obama, fast and furious and undoing years of American policy by declaring the Western Wall in Israel illegally occupied territory in order to get revenge on Netanyahu. These were all abuses of power and all good reasons for deciding to vote against the candidate if he runs for re-election, but none of them rise to the level of impeachable offenses.
This now will go to the Senate, assuming that Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, conveys the articles. Right now, she's not.
Even if she doesn't, I think it will go to the Senate. The Senate doesn't have to wait for the House. There's nothing in the Constitution that says that the House delivers articles of impeachment to the Senate. It says each is the judge of their own role, and the Senate now can just simply begin a trial. It doesn't have to wait for Nancy Pelosi. Her job is done. She has presided over an unconstitutional impeachment. Now the matter goes to the Senate. I don't think there's anything she could do to stop it.
In the Clinton case, there was a motion to dismiss. It was rejected by the Senate. Mm-hmm. But here, given the lack of evidence, treason, bribery, high crimes and misdemeanors, and only opinion witnesses, would a motion to dismiss be viable?
I think it would be viable. I think it would be focused on the fact that neither of the two articles of impeachment charge impeachable offenses. It wouldn't get into the evidence. So you can't dismiss based on a disagreement about evidence, but you can dismiss. I'll give you an example. If a grand jury were to indict a married couple for getting married, though one was black and one was white, and let's assume there were a statute, because there are still some miscegenation statutes on the books, clearly it would never come to trial. The trial judge would dismiss on the ground that the indictment was unconstitutional and that the defendant did not have to endure a trial. That would be a plausible argument for the president's lawyers to make. Who to make that argument to, whether it's made to the Chief Justice, whether it's made to the Senate as a whole, whether you can bring it to a federal court, those are all issues that have never been really tested except in very different factual settings. So we don't know what would happen if that motion was made, but it would be a plausible motion to make.
The House is now saying to the Senate, we want you to call the witnesses we didn't call in our impeachment proceedings. Isn't that a bit like asking the jury to do the job that the prosecutor failed to do?
I think that's right. I mean, the prosecution has the burden of presenting evidence sufficient to indict and sufficient to impeach. And, you know, they rushed this job. They could easily have gotten the courts to decide whether or not subpoenas should be validated. There's no reason to have rushed this process in this way. Courts are always willing to expedite when it comes to very important matters like presidential impeachment. So I think the Democrats wanted to have it both ways. They wanted to issue the subpoenas, but they didn't want to go through the process by which subpoenas are generally validated. And I don't think the Senate does the job for them. The Senate looks at the two articles of impeachment and says they're not constitutionally sufficient and either dismisses or acquits based on that.
Professor Alan Dershowitz of Harvard Law School, one of the best scholars on constitutional law, wrote the book, The Case Against Impeaching Trump. And his new book, Guilt by Accusation, is excellent. I highly recommend it. Professor, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much. Be well.
I'm Greg Jarrett. Be sure to pick up my new book, Witch Hunt, the story of the greatest mass delusion in American political history, available in bookstores everywhere and online.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.